a Katra podcast conversations for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're here to take fascinating source material and, well, really break it down into knowledge you can use.
And today we're diving into something that often gets dismissed, maybe a bit politely, as just stories.
Right, but it's actually fundamental. We're talking about myth.
We're drawing heavily on the really comprehensive work of Robert A. Segal, particularly his books Myth and Myth, a very short introduction.
And the goal today really is to give you the intellectual toolkit to start seeing mythological thinking.
Right.
Well, everywhere. Because as Segal argues, it is everywhere.
That's the big shift he wants us to make, isn't it? He argues myth isn't some outdated relic, you know, something people did before science came along.
Exactly. He sees it as a fundamental, continuing part of human culture, a really quite sophisticated symbolic system that helps us grapple with the big questions.
Meaning identity, our place in the universe, all that stuff.
So we're definitely moving past that simple myth equals falsehood idea. Segal gives us this amazing academic framework to analyze why these old stories stick around, why they keep popping up in new forms.
And how all these different thinkers, you know, Freud, Frazier, tried to figure out what myth was all about.
Okay, so let's talk about Robert Segal himself for a moment, because his background is key to why his synthesis is so helpful.
Right. He's a very distinguished scholar, held posts like the 6th century chair in religious studies at the University of Aberdeen.
But the really unique thing is his foundation, isn't it? He has advanced degrees in both religious studies and the social sciences.
Yeah, and that interdisciplinary view is crucial. It means he doesn't just look at myths as old texts for like language analysis or history. He sees them as social things, psychological things.
He looks across the disciplinary boundaries.
Precisely. And he kind of positions himself as a theorist of theories. He's not necessarily trying to give us his definitive interpretation of, say, the Odyssey.
His focus is more on analyzing how people like Jung or Aliyat or Levi Strauss went about interpreting it.
He maps out the whole intellectual landscape for us, shows us their assumptions, maybe their blind spots.
It's like getting a cartographer's view of the whole field of myth studies.
Mm-hmm.
He takes these really dense academic arguments and just clarifies them objectively.
Which makes him the perfect guide if you want a shortcut to really grasping what myth study is trying to do.
So let's dig into the core argument of his work then.
Okay. Segal basically starts by saying, look, myth is just too big, too varied. It works on so many levels, psychological, social, existential, that no single academic field can possibly explain it all.
So the aim isn't to find the one perfect definition of myth. It's more about giving us a survey of the major ways people have tried to analyze it.
Yeah, and pushing us past thinking of myth as just not true.
And to make sense of all these theories, he uses this really helpful organizing principle, two sets of questions, almost like a grid.
First, does the theory focus on the origin of the myth? You know, what caused it way back when? Or does it focus on its function? What does it actually do for a society right now?
And the second distinction, does the theory treat the myth literally, like a sort of primitive science trying to explain things?
Mm-hmm.
Or symbolically, as expressing some deeper truth, maybe psychological or social?
Right. And using that structure, Segal gives us this really versatile toolkit. So you encounter some story, some narrative, and you can kind of run it through these different filters, see what meanings pop out.
Okay, let's start running through that toolkit. Beginning with the oldest approach he covers, the intellectualist school.
Uh-huh. This was big in the 19th century. They were really fascinated by the idea of myth as a kind of pre-scientific attempt to explain the physical world.
Like E.B. Tyler.
Exactly. Tyler had this theory of animism. He figured early humans saw puzzling things, dreams, shadows, echoes, and rationally but wrongly concluded they were caused by spirits.
And the myths were the stories about those spirits, explaining the world, but just getting the facts wrong.
Pretty much. And then the most famous example is probably Sir James George Frazer, The Golden Bough, huge, massive work.
Right. He had that evolutionary idea for human thought.
Yeah, Frazer proposed this linear path, first magic, then religion, and finally the peak, science.
And myth fits into those earlier stages.
Explicitly. He often saw myths, especially the ones about dying and rising gods, as basically the scripts for rituals. Rituals aimed at controlling nature, like farming rites.
So for this school, the main purpose of myth is explanation. But it's a flawed explanation, destined to be replaced by science.
That's the core idea.
Doesn't that view still kind of linger, though? Like when people dismiss certain beliefs as primitive, Aren't they basically channeling Frazier?
Oh, absolutely. It shows how powerful that framework was. But academic thinking shifted quite dramatically, moved away from explanation towards function.
Which brings us to the functionalist approach.
Right. Now the question becomes, what does the myth do for the community here and now?
And the big name here is the anthropologist Bronisław Malinowski.
Malinowski did this amazing fieldwork, especially in the Trobriand Islands, and he concluded that myth is essentially a social charter.
Meaning?
Meaning it's intensely practical. Its function isn't about explaining the past, it's about validating the present, justifying current social structures, customs, land rights, who does what job. It's a tool for maintaining social order now.
Okay. And then there's Emil Durkheim, more on the sociological side.
Yes. Durkheim looked even broader. How does myth help create society itself? He argued that the gods, the sacred powers and myths, are really symbolic representations of society, the group.
So worshiping the god is like unconsciously worshiping the social group.
Kind of, yeah. The stories, the rituals, they create what he called collective effervescence, that intense shared emotional buzz you get in a crowd.
And that reinforces social bonds. Solidarity?
Exactly. Myth acts like the glue holding the collective together.
Okay, now for a big shift. We move from looking outward at society, nature, to looking inward, inside the human mind.
Right, the psychological expression approach, locating meaning in the psyche, individual and collective.
And the classic division here is Freud versus Jung.
Freud, famously, saw myths as the collective dreams of humanity, expressing deeply repressed, unconscious desires.
The Oedipus myth being his prime example.
Right. Son kills father, marries mother. For Freud, this was the blueprint for the Oedipus complex, revealing those hidden, taboo, incestuous, and patricidal urges.
So for Freud, myths are almost like symptoms, evidence of a collective neurosis.
In a way, yes, but then you get Carl Gustav Jung, who had a very different, much more positive take.
How so?
Jung saw myths as expressions of archetypes. These are universal, primordial patterns of thought coming from the collective unconscious.
Things like the hero, the shadow, the anima.
Exactly. And for Jung, these aren't signs of sickness. They're healthy, natural, universal structures of the mind trying to express themselves.
That's a really interesting contrast. The same story, Oedipus, maybe could be seen as a symptom of sickness by Freud or a necessary expression of health by Jung.
It is fascinating. Does Segal talk about why one view might feel more appealing than the other?
He does note that Jung's view often seems more appealing because it frames myth as productive, even necessary for growth. Think about the hero's journey narrative.
Right, symbolizing individuation, that whole psychological journey towards self-realization.
Whereas Freud's view can feel inherently destabilizing, maybe more pessimistic about our core motivations.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, that brings us to the last major theoretical area Segal covers. This is maybe the more abstract stuff. Structuralism in sacred history.
Enter Claude Lévi-Strauss. Structuralism, this is a big one.
For Lévi-Strauss, the meaning isn't really in the plot or even the social function. It's in the underlying structure of the myth.
How the story is put together.
More like how the mind puts the world together. He believed the mind fundamentally thinks in binary oppositions, life versus death, nature versus culture, raw versus cooked. And myth, for Lévi-Strauss, acts like a logical tool. Its function is to mediate, to bridge the gap between these deep, irreconcilable contradictions that we perceive in the world.
Wow, okay, this gets complex. He analyzed the Oedipus myth too, right?
Yeah.
But differently from Freud.
Totally differently. He argued it wasn't about repressed desire, but about logically grappling with contradictory ideas about where humans come from.
Like, are we born from the earth, autochthony, or are we born from two parents? Biology versus something else.
Exactly. The myth, in its structure, provides a kind of symbolic way to hold both those contradictory ideas together, even though they can't logically coexist in reality. It's like myth is a form of logic.
That's a mind bender. Okay. And then in sharp contrast to that kind of abstract logic, we have Mircea Eliade.
Right. Eliade brings us back to religion, spirituality, ultimate meaning.
For Eliade, myth is fundamentally a sacred story, a true story for believers about origins, creation, set back in illo tempore, that sacred time before time.
And its main function isn't logical mediation, it's performative. It allows believers, through ritual or retelling, to escape ordinary, profane time.
And re-enter that original, sacred, creative moment.
Yeah, and that re-entry gives their lives ultimate meaning, orientation, connects them to the sacred.
It really feels like Segal makes the case that you need all these lenses, doesn't it, to really get the full picture of what myth is doing.
Absolutely. And beyond the specific theories, his synthesis highlights some really powerful overarching themes.
Okay, what are the big takeaways?
Theme one, the multiplicity of interpretation. Basically, the fact that there are so many theories isn't a weakness. It actually reflects how complex myth itself is.
So we need intellectual humility. No single theory wins.
Pretty much. It's like analyzing, say, a major news event. You wouldn't just use a sociological lens, right? You probably want a psychological perspective too, maybe an economic one.
Right. You need multiple angles.
Same with myth. It demands that kind of multi-layered approach.
Okay. What else?
Theme two, the continuing relevance of myth. This is huge. Myth isn't just ancient history. Mythological patterns are absolutely alive and well today.
In movies, politics, advertising.
Everywhere. That whole idea that modern rational thought has completely replaced myth, Segal really challenges that. Just look at how pervasive the hero's journey narrative is in, like, every blockbuster movie.
Good point. Okay, theme three.
Theme three, literal versus symbolic truth. This follows on from the relevance point. The useful question isn't, is this myth factually true? It's, what kind of truth is it expressing?
Existential truth, meaning about the human condition rather than scientific facts.
Exactly. Myths operate in that realm of meaning, experience, value, not empirical proof.
And the last one.
Theme four, universal versus particular. We need to balance the big universal human themes, maybe like Jung's archetypes, with the very specific cultural context that someone like Malinowski emphasized.
So understand the local details, but also see how it connects to broader human concerns.
Right. You need both perspectives to really understand a specific cultural story.
One of the real strengths of Segal's work seems to be how clearly he summarizes things. He gives you these powerful takeaway statements.
He really does. They act like guiding principles. I actually pulled out three key ideas from his synthesis that I think really capture his overall view.
Okay, let's hear them. The guiding principles.
First one, myth is not a survival of primitive mentality, but a fundamental mode of human consciousness.
Okay, that directly challenges those 19th century intellectualists we talked about.
Completely. It insists that thinking in mythical patterns is just part of being human, an ongoing thing, not something we evolve past.
It keeps myth relevant, right here, right now.
Okay.
Second one.
Second, every theory of myth reveals as much about the theorist as about myth itself.
The reflexivity point.
Okay.
We bring our own baggage to the interpretation.
Totally. Frazier, living in Victorian England, saw myth through that lens. Freud saw it through his psychoanalytic lens. Our own time, our own culture, our own discipline, it all shapes how we read a story.
That's a crucial warning, isn't it? Always check your own assumptions before you start analyzing.
Definitely. And the third one, myth bridges the gap between the individual and the universal, the particular and the eternal.
That captures it beautifully. It connects our personal stuff, our struggles, our joys to these bigger, timeless patterns.
Gives life structure, significance, connects the personal to something larger than ourselves.
This framework is so useful. But practically speaking, how do we actually use this toolkit without getting bogged down? Like when we're just watching a movie or reading the news?
Well, start with media literacy. It's a great training ground. When you watch that next blockbuster, try putting on the Jungian hat.
Okay, instead of just plot, look for the archetypes.
Yeah. Who's the shadow? You know, the dark, repressed side of the hero. Who's the mentor figure? Spotting these patterns helps you see how the story works on us, why it feels compelling.
And we could use Levi Strauss, too. Like, look for the binary oppositions.
Mm-hmm.
Is the conflict in this political debate really about policy details? Or is it staging a deeper clash, like order versus chaos?
Exactly. You start seeing the underlying symbolic logic, not just the surface events.
Okay, where else can we apply this?
Think about business and organizational contexts. Companies absolutely create and maintain corporate myths.
Like the classic started in a garage story for tech companies.
Precisely. That story functions just like Malinowski's social charter. It validates the current culture, maybe long hours, intense dedication by linking it back to a heroic origin.
It provides meaning, identity, reinforces the idea that this is how we succeed here, even if things have totally changed since the garage days.
Right. And finally, political discourse. This is a huge one. Apply that functionalist lens Malinowski-Durkheim to national foundation myths.
Stories about national destiny, exceptionalism, sacrifice.
Yeah. Those aren't just history lessons. They are active social charters. They're used now to justify policies, create a sense of national unity, frame who's in and who's out.
Wow, this deep dive into Seagal has really, it's put a structure on something that felt kind of nebulous before. It's incredibly clarifying.
I think the biggest takeaway for me is that methodological pluralism, appreciating all those dimensions, psychological, social, symbolic, instead of hunting for the one right answer.
Studying myth really is studying ourselves, isn't it?
It is.
And what surprised me most, actually reading through this, is that shift Seagal pushes for moving away from seeing myth and reason as enemies,
Yeah, not oppositional.
but as complementary, both necessary parts of how humans understand the world, how we flourish.
That's the real power here, I think. Taking something often dismissed as falsehood and showing its enduring essential truth.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful buck, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.